Hi, I'm Jamer Brazil, and you're listening to the Happy Market Research Podcast. My guest today is Roher Verhulst, Director of Market Research at LinkedIn. Launched in 2003, LinkedIn is the dominant social networking platform for today's professionals, with over 500 million members in 200 countries. Prior to joining LinkedIn, Roher was a restaurant manager in the Netherlands and has worked at both Research International and Microsoft. Roher, thank you very much for joining me today.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we're sitting inside of your offices in San Francisco.
That's right.
Thank you very much for hosting us today.
Yeah.
We're thrilled to be here. For all of us, it's a thrill. Anytime we can come visit a big brand, I'm sure it kind of wears off for you as you walk in. But anyway, we spent a good 5 minutes in front of the LinkedIn signage doing selfies and updating our social media. I know. It's just that big of a fanboy. One of our signature questions has become centric to where you come from and what has informed your career today. So could you tell us a little bit about your parents, what they did, and how they helped move you to where you are today at LinkedIn?
Yeah, so my parents were both in the education. They were both teachers. And I think if you think of market research, you know, there's a big aspect to it that has to do with educating your stakeholders on what's happening in the marketplace, and doing research is sort of an academic exercise. So obviously the notion of education was really important to us when we grew up. Some of that probably rubbed off in terms of my curiosity for looking at human behavior, studying human behavior, and translating it into solving problems for the business. And so I think Not directly. My parents didn't tell me, like, you should go into market research. But I think there was definitely some of that was rubbing off in terms of their emphasis on education, the emphasis on studying, and which inherently is what market research is about.
Yeah, I mean, market research at a fundamental level is a scientific test. So it's build a hypothesis, test the hypothesis, and then be objective in terms of the learning. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
The educational component is a little bit more, I guess, abstract. And what I mean by that is 10, even 20 years ago, market research was seen, I think, more as this checkbox for companies. And now it has moved a lot more into being a driver of decisions. So how does that fit inside of what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think market research, I mean, back in the day when I was back in school, you didn't have a formalized degree in market research. I mean, if you ask a lot of my peers, most people say that they kind of rolled into it. They were either on their path to becoming a PhD or doing something academic, but then felt like they couldn't get comfortable with the pace or weren't quite ready to do publications. And so you see a lot of these people kind of move into market research, but fairly rarely do you hear people say, like, you know, I was born, and from the data I was born, I want to be a market researcher. So it's kind of unusual. I mean, in my case, I love doing, I always had curiosity and I loved kind of observing humans and studying that. And I loved the process of writing reports about it and sharing it with the world. You know, I think market research here at LinkedIn has evolved quite a bit. I think it's come from more of a kind of, like you said, a checkbox kind of thing to something that, you know, executives really look for answers on questions that, quite frankly, they cannot answer with just looking at data or financial metrics. More and more companies are realizing that, you know, you need to ask the question to a customer or member to really understand what are you building and where do you find product market fit. I think we've come a long way. I think there's still a lot of room for elevating the role of market research within organizations. You know, there's still a little bit of a stigma that things take a long time, but I think the technology has come a long way in terms of being more agile and, you know, data begets data. And so when there's more data, people are naturally inclined to understand, like, what is the motivation or what's the why behind that data. So I think you're absolutely right. I think market research is a growing field. I expect it to grow pretty rapidly in the next couple of years.
Yeah, so do I. I'm really excited about, I feel like market research finally is having some tailwinds from a visibility perspective. It's almost like we've been relegated to the kids' table and we've finally gotten through college now, and the parents are willing to sit and have a drink with us.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's a super relevant.
Yeah, and there's some great programs. Like we hired a few people from University of Georgia, University of Michigan. They have very good programs in market research now, which we didn't have 10, 15 years ago. And so I think there's much more focus around it in the same way that you see a lot of focus on product management and product managers.
Yeah.
And so it's really a growing field. Yeah.
Yeah. Part of our audience are aspiring researchers. These are, you know, either recent grads, like you said, Georgia, Michigan.
Yep.
They're looking at how do I enter in and penetrate the marketing research world. What are some steps they could take in order to set them apart from their peers so that a company like LinkedIn, yourself, would be interested in hiring them?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that kind of your heart is in the right place. Uh-huh. I think a lot of people still make decisions in their careers of like, I want to be in their role. I want to be a doctor or lawyer just because it's going to make me a lot of money or because this is going to get me to where I want to be. But I think the most important thing for people to realize, even if they come out of a program from University of Georgia or Michigan, that they really have the heart in the right place. They're passionate about data. They have a natural curiosity for studying human behavior, studying why people make certain preferences for certain products. So I think that's really important. That's number one. I think the second thing is, and I tell people this, is like, you know, rather than jumping into one of those cachet brands over LinkedIn or Facebook, one of the best education you can get is actually on the vendor side and working with a variety of companies on a variety of kind of problems to get a sort of breadth of understanding and variety of understanding. Now, what you don't get from working on the vendor side is you won't get sort of to see how, you know, things get implemented or how it drives particular decisions. So at the same token, I always kind of advise people when they're still early on is to look for kind of roles that are sort of related to market research, but maybe more closer to the user, the end user, or the end customer. So for example, UER or customer success even. These roles which give you kind of a good role and affinity for what the customer or end user is feeling about the product. And so combining those assets will set you kind of apart from the other market researchers. But yeah, I'd say those are the most important things. So obviously you need to understand the fundamentals of market research. But beyond that, it's really looking for like experiences that will help you understand, either give you better sort of general business understanding or general understanding of how decisions get made within organizations.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of, you know, I've obviously spent my career almost exclusively on the agency side of things, servicing small and large firms. And I get just a massive swatch of types of project exposure, qualitative and quantitative in nature, which is really exciting. But you're right, it's much more of a short-term life cycle. And one of the things, I used to do a lot of work with Visa, as they matured their data management systems, it was very evident to me that I was actually missing out on, you know, the 90%. In other words, once the data was delivered and the why was declared, then there's a bunch of things that happen and being able to, and you lose that visibility on the vendor side, which is this sort of like satisfaction, I think, that a person could get out of it. So it would be helpful probably to have both.
Yeah, you need to have both. But I think when I look at some of the most successful hires we've made, I mean, they have had sort of this vendor experience early on. It's good schooling in terms of not just looking at the theory that you learn in school, but how do things work out in practice? And it gives you kind of the underpinnings that then help you to kind of accelerate. I think when you come out of school and you've had a marketing research degree and you go into a company, oftentimes the problems you're facing may be more limited. You may not be exposed to all the research techniques that you would be in the vendor side. So it's a good first move.
There is a lot of baling wire and duct tape on the agency side, putting things together, right? Yep. So you develop this like scrappy nature of just how to get stuff done.
Yeah.
This just came up in a conversation I recently had where the person had grown up on the vendor side, now has moved on to the brand side. Mm-hmm. And she says, I can operate at a macro level. So in other words, setting vision, understanding objectives. But if I need to, I can roll my sleeves up and get it done.
Right.
You know, right?
Yeah.
So it's a...
Exactly. That's the other advantage. Like you kind of know enough that you're not just becoming a project manager, program manager, but you actually can...
Yeah,
you can
add value at the logistical level as well.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. Three characteristics of an all-star employee.
Well, I think, you know, this sounds kind of obvious, but obviously you need to have analytical horsepower and analytical skills and problem-solving skills. I mean, that's just like number one. I rarely would pass anyone on that doesn't have that capacity to do. And so the way you demonstrate this is obviously through, you know, the coursework you've done. You know, being able to distill information, large amounts of information into insights. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just quant. It can also be qualitative, right? Mm-hmm. I think the second thing is... Really, I mean, obviously you need to have the technical skills, but what's more importantly is that you have sort of the influencing skills, that you can take a particular insight and influence the organization to take action. Like it's one thing to kind of understand kind of the research and what the findings are, but then translating it to kind of the so what and now what is almost equally important coming up with the insight in the first place. So I'd say that's number two. I think the third thing is you know, being proactive. I think, you know, oftentimes organizations are moving at a certain pace. And so you need to understand kind of where's the business at? What are the problems that the business are facing, and look at it a little bit more holistically. Otherwise, oftentimes what researchers are doing, they're just kind of doing confirmatory research. Mm. They're just kind of validating what the executive wants to hear or know.
More of that old school checkbox.
Yeah, versus like you want to be a little bit more provocative and looking at the data maybe from the perspective of what's the data really telling me that maybe is a little bit different that I wasn't expecting. And what is the surprise here? And so then be proactive about communicating the insight back to the organization. So the ability to have that takes a certain experience and skill set. You have to be provocative. You have to be able to sort of get up in front of fairly executive people, particularly when you go and market research at a big brand.
Yeah.
You quickly find yourself actually in a room with a lot of VPs. And so you need to be strong in terms of how you make your arguments and how you make sometimes very provocative statements. And so it requires also to build kind of that trust and credibility.
Internally.
Internally. Yeah. And so that relationship building aspect is really important as well.
Yeah, that is one of the things I've seen. Yeah. Very successful corporate researchers do an amazing job of managing their personal brand internally, mm-hmm. you know, just handling the political dynamics of the room.
Yep.
So how is LinkedIn using insights today? What I mean by that is you're a piece of inside of a machine, right? And it's driving things like business outcomes, marketing spend decisions, et cetera. And the second part of that is really what sort of tools or techniques are you employing?
Yeah. So the way I always kind of think about our role is that, you know, we play sort of in three arenas. Like one is we provide metrics that are suggesting what the health of the business is, right? So they help us understand how strong the relationships are that we have with our customers or members through things like NPS or customer satisfaction. So metrics that are not necessarily financially related, but it gives a little bit richer insight in terms of like what's really going on in the minds of our customers and members. So that's kind of like what I throw in the bucket of business health and brand metrics and brand funnel metrics is part of that. But also churn and why is churn happening in our accounts. I think the second thing is kind of this deeper question around, okay, where should we play? Like, who are the markets that we're going after? What do the audiences look like? So segmentation will often be applied. Understanding kind of the competitive landscape. So what's the arena we're playing in with different products? Obviously, we have a lot of different business lines. Mm-hmm. The competitors we're up against in our talent solutions business are very different than the competitors in marketing solutions or sales solutions. Mm. So understanding that landscape and the broader dynamics is sort of like where to play. And then the last category is really like, how do we win? So how do we differentiate ourselves from, for example, Indeed? How do we differentiate ourselves from Facebook or Google when it comes to ad buying and ad and the ad space? Yeah, that's generally how LinkedIn uses and leverages the insights that we're producing and sort of informs those three big questions of business health, where to play, and how to win.
It's interesting that you play such a role. You mentioned churn.
Yep.
So can you talk a little bit more about how you guys are employed in that process?
Yeah. So an example would be, you know, we have sort of a what I call kind of foundational studies or studies that are running sort of an ongoing basis. And so when churn is happening at an account level, we want to understand like why is a customer churning?
Right.
And so we would oftentimes follow up with a survey to just kind of understand, is it because of macroeconomic situations? Is it because of competitive pressures, or is it because of things that they're missing in our product? Is there like a dissatisfaction with the product? And so research is often the only way in which you can understand kind of what is the right sort of mix of variables that influence that churn decision, right? And how much can we control versus how much we can control?
Yeah, right. So I'm a logistics guy.
Yeah.
So logistically speaking, the person churns for the audience means they stop being a customer. An example could be the LinkedIn business. The name is escaping me.
Yeah, Talent Solutions or Marketing Solutions.
Marketing Solutions, yeah. That's right. Yep, right. And then you follow up with a survey directly?
Yeah, so essentially, you know, someone can obviously, there's a renewal. A lot of times how the way our business works is like we have renewals. And so their annual, the renewal comes up and the customer is spending less than the prior year.
Yep.
Right. And so if that's a significant amount less than what they were spending last year, that's a churn signal. And we call that partial churn.
Yep.
you know, on the other extreme is like people completely churning and stop being a customer altogether. So both situations, we want to kind of understand what the dynamics are.
Yeah, right. And so yeah. a follow-up with a survey exactly. or... Okay, got it. Yeah. So do you do qualitative in-depth interviews or try...
Yeah, absolutely. We do that as well. I mean, qualitative tends to be, you know... It used to be that quantitative was very time-consuming and qualitative was fast.
Remember the good old days?
I think the world has changed where qualitative now is arguably actually slower than quant. And so right. we tend to do more, I'd say, quantitative research than qualitative. But we do qualitative research too when we really want to get a deep understanding of the issues that people may have around usability of our site or the user interface, or really try to understand kind of what are their motivations. And so we definitely have a mix of things that we do. And you know, oftentimes we have created these sort of insights communities where we can do discussion forums and discuss things fairly quickly around a particular topic or issue.
Yeah, right. Are you using any specific technologies that might be outside of the market research arena?
I'm not sure quite how you define outside of the market research arena. I mean, we obviously are dabbling in things like neuroimaging and right. more of the advanced ways of getting sort of signals that are not done through a traditional survey instrument, whether yep. it's like an online survey or a phone or an interview.
Yep.
And so, yeah, we're playing with some of these techniques. There's some logistical challenges around how do you bring people in a lab and how do you make sure it's representative. So there's some questions around that. But yeah, we're absolutely looking at like other ways of doing it or doing like interviews at scale where you have interview bots.
Yeah.
Where right. the bots sort of are responding and answering questions as they come in. And so we haven't done that last one yet, but that's something that I'm intrigued by as well.
Yeah, that's super interesting. The whole qualitative at scale that's now empowered by AI.
Yep.
I think that space for market research is going to solve a lot of problems because it lets you get to that qualitative why that is very difficult yep. to deduce.
Yeah, and exactly. And then you layer in sort of sophisticated text analytics.
Right.
Where you can look at the sentiments or you can derive what the themes are that are coming up through essentially doing interviews at scale. And that to me is going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So how are you seeing tech disrupt what is traditional market research like?
Yeah, no, I mean, the interesting thing is like, I don't think tech has quite disrupted market research in like in ways that has disrupted some other industries in the sense that it's replacing
right.
People or it's replacing things or processes that we naturally would have done. I think what it's doing is it's actually adding more to the toolkit or the toolbox of the market researcher. It's allowing us to do things that previously were harder to do. Mm-hmm. Makes us more agile. It allows us to do more things in more real time. I've seen some disruption in terms of the digital transformation, in terms of like everything is moving to the internet. And so
yeah.
you see a lot of companies do a lot of A/B testing, right? And right. sort of testing themselves to what they conceive to be their perfect product. Although right. arguably people recognize that you need to understand the motivation behind it. So things that we're doing less of than I think 10, 15 years ago, like conjoint studies, like these heavy duty sort of right. trade-off exercises that are lengthy and very sort of cumbersome on the respondent. And you see more and more being replaced with like A/B testing. But I think where technology has been really powerful in addition to the interview bots and like neuroimaging and you know, I think it's going to be also very interesting how it plays out in terms of brand measurement, in terms of how you derive sort of the signal from a large volume of data to understand kind of what's the brand strength or how well is a brand regarded when it comes to trust. And so I think we'll start to see a lot of investments in that regard as well. But again, you know, the core idea of like looking at data, interpreting it, making meaning out of it, I think that's core. It's sort of where market research sits. And I think we will continue to play a really important role in that.
How is storytelling being changed inside of research?
I think storytelling, I mean, short stories, more sound bites. And
yes.
so can you come up with, you know, things that are shorter as opposed to like the 20, 30 PowerPoint deck,
right.
slide PowerPoint deck? Can you home in on that specific insight that drives that particular action? I think that's how storytelling has changed. So the story becomes more of like a mini version of that. Also, I think how storytelling has changed, or what I've seen, especially over the last 12 months, is like, you know, you can't just lead the story with cold facts. You know, you need to make it emotional. You need mm-hmm. to make it, you need to connect it to a more deeper emotional feeling in order for it to have an impact. And so what we've learned over the last 12 to 18 months is that, you know, when executives look at the data and the statistics. If you can augment and make it come alive with some of the qualitative findings or qualitative quotes or videos, it just lands much more effectively.
I had a presentation, this is about 4 years ago, where it was a Amazon versus eBay study.
Yep.
And I actually co-presented the paper. Mm-hmm. There were slides, normal.
Yep.
And on every slide where we presented data, we would have a video of a respondent actually addressing the point of the slide, the headline of the slide, which then informed the data. And it had a lot more impact at the executive level than any presentation I'd ever given before.
Yeah, no, that's great analogies. I mean, I think the one I always refer to is the sea turtles, right? We've known for a long time that sea turtles are endangered species. Yeah. And they've been using a lot of like cold facts to make that point, but people didn't start to take note of it until they saw that turtle that was wrapped around in plastic.
Right.
And the whole world became disgusted by it, and suddenly people are paying much more attention to it.
Absolutely, right.
So making that connection at that point is really important. I think that's what a quote does and the voice of a human being does.
It's almost like the thinking about what makes a video go viral.
Yep.
It's sort of that same mentality, but for market researchers, which traditionally we've been a little bit more on the boring side, I would say.
Absolutely. Yep. We're changing that.
Yeah, a little bit. What is the number one gap that you've experienced working on the brand side? In other words, if you wake up in the morning, gosh darn it, if this one thing was fixed I wish somebody would address this.
Yeah, look, I think the world is it's easier nowadays for people to do a survey.
Right.
With SurveyMonkey, with Decipher, you have these insights communities. And so it makes it really easy for anyone in the organization to launch a survey. And quite frankly, what we find ourselves in is we have to do quite a bit of education, and people think that they are a market researcher, but there's a real craft to sort of designing questionnaires, interpreting the data, formulating hypotheses. And so I think where there is a gap is in terms of just consulting and education and making sure that, look, market research is not confined to the market research group anymore. Market research is everywhere and it's embedded in the entire organization. And so the ability of the market research industry or the vendor side to sort of recognize that and to be able to help the market research function, the central function, with sort of like, here's how we best can equip the rest of the organization to sort of do their own surveys and get to the answers quickly.
So what is LinkedIn doing right now that it has opportunity to add value to the market research space or our listeners?
LinkedIn is a great platform, obviously, not just to find a job, but it's also a great platform to learn. And so we acquired Lynda a couple of years ago, which essentially we have access to a really rich library of online courses. And I happened to take a look at the other day, and we have a pretty vast sort of collection of market research courses that are very targeted, very specific, around specific skills. So obviously that's one thing that I would encourage people to check out. I think the other thing that we haven't historically invested a lot in sort of groups and LinkedIn groups, but there are a couple of market research oriented groups on LinkedIn. There's the market research professional group on LinkedIn, which has about 90,000 members. And so people share interesting articles and engage in a way there to sort of get up to speed on the latest. So I'd say that's one. And I think the last one is, a lot of people think of LinkedIn, again, as sort of a network of people that are connected, but it's also a fantastic database of companies and company profiles. And so if you're in the market research industry and want to understand sort of an industry or a particular set of companies, you can actually glean a lot of interesting information from just looking at company insights through our premium subscription.
So to that end, I'd like to give an example.
Yep.
I recently created Happy Market Research podcast. I'm trying to get connected to insight pros like yourself. I reached out to a CMO, said, hey, I gave her the value prop pitch. And she responded back the following morning, I would love to be on the show, right? So it would be impossible. I mean, and I know a lot of people, it would be impossible for me to be able to penetrate the corporate wall to get in front of her, to even give her the idea. But what LinkedIn enabled me to do is, versus any other platform and my personal network even, is to be able to cut right to it and drop that note, which she could have ignored or reported me, but she didn't. And she actually found value in what I was contributing. And one of the things that I've noticed being an avid user of LinkedIn is the more I invest in the platform, the more trust I build with my, and I don't have a lot, I have about 16,000 connections.
That's a lot.
Among that group. And so, and that group then starts feeding on itself. So I can post a question and get an answer. I can post a job and I can get resumes. I haven't tried finding a job, fortunately, but maybe, but you know, on that front, but it's an exceptionally powerful platform. I do want to ask you a question about the groups though, because so we are in the process of trying to create a framework for Insight Pros to have dialogues, ask questions, et cetera. There's a few different Insight communities that we've found that are, you know, more forum-based, old school forum-based. We were talking on the drive up today, maybe we should consider LinkedIn. It sounds like groups on LinkedIn are a viable option.
It is. I mean, I think we, you know, we obviously have, we've had a long history with groups, and I think we've made investments, and we've made heavy investments sort of in the past, and we sort of dialed back the investments. And so I think we're finally trying to understand kind of how to do this well. And it's an important piece of our strategy of creating kind of a vibrant, active community on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. But we need to make sure, what the challenge with groups is that you need to have sufficient number of moderators and people who actively manage it and want to sign up for doing that to keep things vibrant and fresh. So you'll start to see us doing more of that and sort of injecting that sort of energy into those groups, but also integrating a little bit more cleanly into the overall experience on LinkedIn, where right now it's actually very difficult to find groups on LinkedIn. You have to go to a separate tab to actually find it, but make it more integrated with the overall experience, along with another feature that we've launched. It's called hashtags. So you can actually follow particular hashtags. So there's a hashtag for market research. And what that allows you to do is allows you to get sort of content that we're sort of curating across the entire ecosystem into your feed. And so then you're able to sort of indicate what your preferences are and what you want to like to hear of more, in addition to what's happening in the groups you signed up in, where you can have that sort of intimate dialogue and two-way conversation.
And the hashtags work exactly like they do on Twitter, for example, right? I know most marketing researchers are using new MR and MRX.
Yep.
And then I like the idea, since we don't have the character limit, of also expanding that to market research.
Yep.
I'll definitely start improving my posts now. Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I mean, I think the thing is, like, you know, the more people are using it, the more people will naturally be, you know, attracted to it. And I think it's kind of a flywheel that we need to actively play in and keep going. Yeah.
My guest today has been Roher. Roher, thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah, welcome. It's a pleasure.